Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us here on the program. We come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We are rebroadcast on Sundays on A2Zen.fm at 3 p.m., and that's Pacific time as well. And we also archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show page. And so you will have lots and lots of good stuff to check out. I also recommend that you go to richarddugan.com interviews. That is a separate page that contains interviews that haven't yet made it to the airwaves. They are going to give you an opportunity to listen to information that has not been heard as of yet on the radio or at A2Zen.fm. You're getting a sneak peek, if you will. And so check out that particular link, the interviews page, and there are quite a number of interviews that have already been conducted and are going to be on the radio program in the not-too-distant future, so we certainly hope that you'll check that out. And if you'd like to become a part of the work that we're doing, if you'd like to support us in any way, shape, or form, there are a couple of methods by which you can do that, and all you have to do is go to the missions page, and you can read about how to go about doing just that. That's the missions page. And again, that is also at richarddugan.com. This program is a lot of fun to do. It's amazing that we've been doing this thing for over 6 years. And I've been interviewing for close to 35, which is just an astounding number. I'm still trying to figure out how in the world was able to do this kind of work, have such a blast doing it. I have so much fun with it, enjoy the people that I talk with, including today's guest, and I think that you're going to enjoy today's guest as well. We are going to be talking today with the author of, I think, a very intriguing and interesting book. I think it's going to be of a great value to you. As well as me, I jokingly, in a manner of speaking, I say this, that this program is sort of like therapy even for me. But today's program is going to be focusing on the work of our guest and the author of The Call of the Soul, A Path to Knowing Your True Self and Your Life's Purpose. And Ayla Achad, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program. Ayla Achad, author again of The Call of the Soul.
I'm delighted to be here, Richard.
This is interesting. I don't know if I shared this with you in our conversations prior to this interview or not, but it seems as though the subject matter is just that. It is dealing more these days, now that we've gotten past all of the craziness with the Mayan calendar in 2012, things are sort of, in a manner of speaking, settling down. As far as the whole transformation of ourselves as human beings and as individuals and of the planet and all of its structures, its infrastructures, if you will, that's not settling down. But it seems as though, as far as this program is concerned, the soul seems to be predominantly in terms of the subject matter. Have you kind of picked up on that since the beginning of 2013?
Well, yeah, we're hearing a lot about our consciousness changing and shifting. And I think we see that in the culture as it's shifting. We've gone, it's like a pendulum that has swung so far to one side where it's all about money and more is better and there's never enough and you've got to keep striving and you've got to keep doing this. And then we've got a new generation coming in that, the frustration in business a lot of times today is these young kids, they don't want to work hard. They want to just be where they want to be. They want to have fun. Well, yeah, they want to have a life aside from striving and working so hard and so on. So as the pendulum starts to swing back, what we're finding is we're getting more in touch with, and the question is, who am I really? What's life about? So these questions have been eternal questions. Who am I and what is my life about? What is my purpose? And so when you've got a big change going on, either personally in your life or as we do now as a society, we have these questions arising. You know, what's important? Is money all important? Is having all these things more important? You know, what about relationships? So we're trying to find again our center. And that center is what I call the soul. It's something that is so abiding in us, and we want to get back in touch with that. What's important to me? What is my life about? And what will really give me satisfaction and fulfillment?
Well, I'm hearing more and more people say that to that end, it isn't the money, it isn't the position. In many cases, it isn't even the work that they're doing. It's not even the place that they live. We could keep listing stuff, and it's none of that.
Well, we know what it's not. We just don't know what it is. And that's why I wrote the book, because once I found how to find that person, because it's very unique for each person. Here's the other thing. It's not something that you can say, oh, okay, this person knows what it is, and I can go for that. It's not outside of you. That's the dilemma. We're used to striving for something outside of us or using a measure that is defined by somebody outside of us, like how should you look, how should you be with other people, it's all that kind of stuff. This is very internal, and you've got to read your own signals. And we've been out of practice doing that. We're not used to trusting our intuition, trusting our gut feeling, trusting our sensations. We've gotten so into our head and our mind as the kind of power center of our body that we've forgotten the soul speaks to us through these other mechanisms. It speaks to us through our heart, through our intuition, and those kinds of things. So we have to get back into practice listening to it. And it's going to be unique for each person.
Well, I find it interesting that you are talking about all of this, and your point of reference as far as occupation is a nurse.
Right.
What does a nurse know about the soul?
Well,
and I asked that.
I've been on a journey since I was in nursing school. I graduated from nursing school in 1969, so I've been on quite a long journey to get here. In nursing school, two things happen. One is that my instructor said 85% of all disease and illness due to stress, and I had a light bulb go off. It said, if that's true, why aren't we helping people get rid of their stress so they don't have to be sick? So my orientation in nursing has always been health promotion and wellness and helping people get rid of what stops that. Because naturally, if we follow our natural inclinations, we will be healthy. You know, we would be eating natural foods. We would be out in the sun and exercising and working. You know, we would be moving. But we are not. We're operating out of sync with the natural order of things. And so more and more of us are having chronic, what we call lifestyle illnesses. So that was one of the messages. Another message she gave me was that you need to know yourself in order to know your patients and be able to help them. And I said, great, how do I do that? And as many people have probably been told, you know, it was right over the oracle in Greece, you know thyself. Hmm. How do you do that? I didn't find a book or anything that told me how to do that. So I set out on this quest, and that's why I call my business Life Quest. It has been my life quest to figure that out. How do you know yourself, and how do you get rid of stress? In a life, in a culture, that's pretty stressful. And that's where I've come to. So my first book was 34 Instant Stress Busters. I had a stress crisis after I was teaching stress management for 25 years, and realized there's a deeper answer to that question. And then I found a deeper answer to the question of how do you know yourself and how do you know your purpose? And it's been a long road of going through many different lifestyle kinds of programs to see how that works. Then I am a coach with other people, and I have noticed that this is how it worked for them. So the book is very much a practical step-by-step, here's how it works, And here are the examples that help you to see this, how you can see it in your own life. And so that's how I came to that point.
Well, first of all, I have to tell you that you come from, now I guess I should back up and ask, are you still a practicing nurse?
Yes, I still have a degree in, I have 2 degrees in nursing, bachelor's and master's, and I'm a nurse coach with people. And I work with a lot of people who have health issues that have gone through the traditional allopathic methods, and it hasn't worked. And so I help them with their stress and releasing the stress. A lot of times pain goes away and, you know, symptoms clear up. So there's many, many of our illnesses that can be supported, helped, and treated with reducing your stress. We know this. The CDC says 90% of all patients that go to a physician have stress at the base of their issue. But we don't really work with it. We don't really show people how to get rid of it. And I've got some techniques, namely the emotional freedom technique, which is an acupressure technique, that work extremely well, better than medication many times, to reduce these issues.
Well, first of all, you come from a field that, from my perspective, is highly respected. I've had nothing but incredible treatment from the nurses that I've had to deal with over the years when I've had different procedures. But more importantly, because my mother was a nurse, and she was a home care nurse at that. She worked in a hospital for quite a long time. So I am very familiar with that ability, but she was also very intuitive. And I have to say that now that I think about it, the one experience that I've shared on this program many times about myself lying in bed with the flu, and now again, I was a kid, maybe, I don't know, 9, 10, maybe 11 years old, and I was lying there in bed moaning, and my mother and one of my sisters came in the room. And my sister said to my mother, "Mom, make him stop. He sounds terrible." To which she said, and I say this, I just remember the words. She says, "No, that's how he heals himself." She knew what I was doing.
Right.
Even if I didn't know what I was doing, all I knew is it seemed to help. So I figured I'm going to keep doing it.
Right.
It didn't cure the flu, but at least it helped me to get through the symptoms, if you will. But
this
is the way that she was with all 6 of us. I mean, you know, and then, of course, she had the various people that she worked with in, you know, under home care and so forth. So
right.
When I say I understand from where you come, it's not so much in terms of your experience in education as much as it is on the receiving end of somebody who truly cares about the people that they're working with to help them to get through what they're getting through.
Exactly. Yeah, what people don't understand, they think nursing is part of medicine. It's not. It's a separate profession. Medicine is focused on the diagnosis and treatment of disease and the symptoms of disease. Nursing is concentrated on focusing on the person. And what is it? So we deal with more of the holistic dimensions, the mind, the body, the spirit, the physical environment, how that's affecting you. Florence Nightingale was very much a researcher in observing what helps people, human beings, get better. And she would notice all kinds of things, everything from asepsis, from washing your hands, to you know, the sun and light and all of these different things. And then she would write letters for the soldiers in the Crimea because she realized that that soul, that spirit, was also important to their wellness. And we know that some people, you know, they change their thinking. They get a diagnosis, and suddenly they're going, you know, I'm not going there. I'm not getting sick, and I'm not going to die, and I'm going to fight this, or I'm going to get better. And they do. And we've got a lot of examples of spontaneous healing. Well, how did that happen? You know, the mind and the body are not separate, never have been.
Was it Norman Vincent Peale who was dying, was told he only had X number of weeks or months to live, and he said no? And he was the one who laid in bed and watched comedies that made him laugh?
No, that was...
Who am
oh
I thinking
God.
Of?
Bernie Siegel.
Ah, okay. Sorry.
Bernie
Sorry,
Siegel.
Bernie.
Yes.
I should have remembered. I've had him on the program. I should know this. But,
yeah.
I mean, I love watching... I love watching comedies, cartoons, and so forth.
Sure.
I just happened to come across my mother, for each one of us, kept a baby book. And so one of the things that I found in the writings that she kept going back 50 years was that he's a happy baby, loves to laugh. But I still do.
Well, see, that was the nature of your soul from the very beginning,
yeah.
Richard. You loved that sense of joy, happiness, and you look for that in your life.
And I seem to be able to find it pretty regularly. And
sure.
I think that it's something that we in our society are really lacking. Now, you said that the majority of people who go to the doctor, 99%, and you didn't say this, but I would venture that 99% of the people who come in are dealing with some form of stress due to our
CDC,
CDC.
Center for Disease Control,
right.
Says 90% of all doctor visits are due to stress.
I'd crank it up to 99. I'm sorry, CDC.
Yeah, let's exaggerate.
But my point is that it's
probably
our
true.
Society. It's our social structure. It's the infrastructures that we live and work in. And I'm not speaking of anything physical per se. It's the economic structure that is, I've said this before to folks, that we as a species, we are killing ourselves with the lifestyle that we are living, in spite of the fact that there will be those who will say that A, this is the greatest country in the world, and B, that capitalism and free enterprise are the only way to go. And I'm looking around going, we better find another way to go, or we're not going anywhere. We're going to die off.
Yeah. Well, it's not so much that free market, culture and so on is a bad thing. It's that we've gone too far to the extreme of thinking money is everything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I heard something on the radio not too long ago where a person said, well, those folks in Wall Street didn't do anything illegal. They may not have done anything illegal, but was it immoral? In the sense that there is no balance, there is no concern for the human beings, and we don't have this sense that we're all connected, that what happens to some of us affects the rest of us. You know what I mean?
Yes.
We've lost that kind of sense of community, and I think the pendulum's swinging back. Now you see community gardens. You see people starting to help each other.
Yeah.
People getting more involved in their community and the arts. And I think that's an effort to move that pendulum back. So it's not that anything is black or white.
Right.
It's that we've lost our balance.
Correct. Have you ever seen a videotape or films of the activity that transpires on the floor of Wall Street? And now I'm talking going back, say, 20 or 30 years. People are arms are flailing around, papers are flying around, and it's just noisy as can be. I'm going, how can you? I don't even know what they're doing.
Right.
I can't figure out who are you talking? Who are you yelling at?
Right.
You know.
Right. But we've also become addicted. We're an addicted culture, right?
Yeah.
Addictive culture in the sense that more is better and is never enough. That's the definition of addiction.
Yeah.
And adrenaline. You can see the adrenaline in that, right? And so that's an addictive process. The adrenaline, cortisol, it just rises up and it invigorates us artificially for a while.
Mm-hmm.
What I've found is that when you are connected to your soul's purpose, you have a natural energy, enthusiasm, joy. Those kinds of things come from that connection. And they're very natural. They don't deplete your body. They don't cause you to have exhaustion, burnout, unlike this adrenaline rush, which is very addictive and attractive temporarily, but that's what deteriorates your body.
I moved from Phoenix, Arizona. And I complain a lot about the heat, but I think I'm justified in to some degree. But I have to say that city, my hometown, changed so much in the 45 years that I lived there that it's almost unrecognizable to me. The population has increased. The land mass, if you will, of the city has doubled, tripled, quadrupled. I don't know what the number would be. I there just came a point where I used to bicycle in Phoenix everywhere in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. I bicycled from the Far East, what was Scottsdale, which was the Far East, out to Glendale. And I think I even went as far as Sun City West once and all points in between. I would never do that today because it's changed so much. I mean, I didn't have any fear back then because I was a very defensive driver. I still am now. But the vehicles are just, oh, my goodness. So there's a stressor right there. Now I'm here in Santa Barbara, and yet I'm kind of starting to see a little bit of the same kind of thing happening. I don't bicycle much here. I drive. But still, this particular community was designed around small vehicles. But you and I both know that a majority of people like these big old SUVs. And I'm not passing judgment. I'm just saying if the town, it's like if your garage was originally designed to hold a sports car and you try to shove an SUV in there, are you going to be able to get the doors open?
Well, and you were talking, Richard, about liking to watch comedy and humor. Think about what people are watching day in and day out. Yeah. They're watching CNN. They're watching the news. One of my stress busters is turn off the news.
Yes.
Get your headlines. Don't be ignorant. And don't watch this stuff day in and day out. Don't have it on when you're sleeping and it's still penetrating your unconscious mind. I mean, this is what people are watching all the time. My kids, my grandchildren, I go to their house and they've got the TV on. I said, hey, guys, let's go out and play.
Yeah. I get my news from The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, so there you go. I was watching Peter.
If you weren't stressed before, turn on the news, and you'll be stressed in just a few minutes.
Yeah.
I was at a hotel. I don't have TV anymore, but I was at a hotel, and I went down to the exercise room, and they had the CNN on. Number one, I don't need a TV because it's everywhere. It's in every restaurant. It's even in the elevators in some buildings. So this TV is on, and just within 5 minutes, I had to leave. I couldn't stand just listening to it in the background after not hearing that every morning. You know what I mean?
Wow.
So I think that's part of our stress is that our lifestyle, as you say, and our everyday bombardment, what you feed your mind is as important as what you feed your body. And we are out of sync with the natural things that energize us and help us to feel good and healthy.
It's what we say on this program all the time. It's so important what you take in through your senses. And it doesn't matter which one you want to pull out there. It's important to discern who you want to associate with. It's important to discern where you want to be physically. And then, of course, again, it's all those other things coming in. And as far as going back to the whole news thing, about 20, 30 years ago, I was sitting there watching Peter Jennings doing the news and thinking, it'd be kind of neat to have a laugh track on this thing. And within a few years, bingo, there was Comedy Central and The Daily Show. And I love the spins that they put on the stories because they are so poignant and so it's like this is satire. But at the same time, they're pulling stuff that's real from what's out there. But it makes you laugh. It makes you say, yeah, you're right. But you also get to laugh, too. And I like that about that program. Now,
and see, this is part of what you bring to people. Richard, this is the call of your soul, is to, and which it shows up in infancy. If you look at a child before the age of 5, and the earlier the better, 1-2 years old, you start to see what I call their affinities, what they are attracted to, what they love, what they are curious about. Your mother noticed that in you right from the beginning, and here it is again. It shows up everywhere. And so now, even in terms of the news, you found a news program that provides this satire and humor. Okay, so it's not like it's not something that's real in the world, and you have your little twist on it. Not only that, you bring it to the world. You bring it to the people who listen to this program, and this is your contribution. It's your gift. It's your purpose.
Well, cartoons.
You've been doing this for how many years, you said?
Well, I've been interviewing for over almost 35. This
you must love it.
I want to do this full time. I mean, I would sit here. I don't know if I'd last 8 hours, but a different guest every hour, and just sit here and talk to people and say, hey, what's going on? What are you doing? What kind of work are you doing? And why are you doing it? And how did this happen to you? How did you get started? What was the catalyst?
Right.
You know,
you're good at it, and it is your desire, right, to do this even full time.
Very
that
much so.
Is the clue. And so for people who are listening, what you love to do, that even if people didn't pay you to do it, you would love to do it, that is your call of your soul, and that is your call to your true purpose. Now, when you're called to that, you have the ability and the talent to do it, which you do. So not that you can't learn skills. You can. You can learn skills that go with that. But if you try to squeeze yourself in like a round peg in a square hole, mm-hmm. you go and try to become an engineer or a computer engineer because that's what you should do to make a good living and buy three cars and a big house and have kids, that's not going to work for you. You're going to work harder, and you're not going to get as far as if you're doing what you love to do. You'll have enough. And see, we don't have the word enough in this culture. The word enough doesn't exist. More is better.
Yeah.
You've got this? Okay, what's next?
Yeah.
You know, we're always looking for the next thing.
Yeah. Well, and I've asked the question of people down through the last couple of years of doing this program because the direction's been, in a general sense, it's always been the same. New paradigms for a new world. We're looking for those choices. We're going to expose to the listeners things that maybe they've heard of, maybe they haven't. And if they haven't, guess what? You're going to hear something new today that you may or may not want to use. And it's not up to us to say, this is the end all and be all. You got to buy into this. No. We lay out a spread, a smorgasbord, as I say. You take what you need and you leave the rest. That's what it's about. It's not up to us to sit here and say, no. Ayla Achad, she's the bomb, as the phrase might go. She is it, okay? She is the one who has all the answers. And, man, you need to go to her website and you need to get her book, The Call of the Soul, because this is it. And then, of course, I'm going to have to do that with every single program. No.
Sure.
Ayla has a piece of the puzzle. Check it out. Some of it will work, and some of it may not, but you have to, you the listener, you have to make that decision.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And see, that's one of the things I had to overcome when I wrote the first book on stress. I was thinking, you know, does the world really need another book on stress? I already owned most of the books on stress. So, you know, the question is, do we need another one? Well, the key is that each one of us speaks a little bit different language, and certain people hear it in certain ways. So I'm not saying anything really that different. There's one thing really different in my book, pretty different, and that is that the ego, the part of us that got conditioned when we were little, that says to us, you know, just being who you are and doing what you love will never work. You can't make money at it. You can't, you know, people will abandon you. You'll look weird. Whatever it was that you learned and heard when you were little about how you are and who you are. And that conditioning is what we call our ego. Well, today, and I'm sure there are people out there saying, well, yeah, I'd love to do what I love to do, but I can't make any money at it. If I leave my job, I'll lose my health insurance. You know, all of these practical, structural things that the culture tells us, you know, it never work.
Right.
You can't be an artist. You can't interview people every day and make a living at that. You know, whatever that is. The fact of the matter is that ego, that conditioned part of us, can be reconditioned. And I don't think anybody's really said it in the way I've said it, is that the ego was designed to protect the soul, because the soul was just naive, and you're out there exploring the world, and you get your little hand slapped, and you have to sit in the corner, be quiet, da-da-da. Whatever happened when you were just exploring in your naive way, that becomes the ego. And then as you grow up now, you're an adult. You can handle a little rejection. You can handle a little, somebody doesn't like what you want to do. but it feels so threatening. It feels life-threatening, like oh my gosh, Mom won't feed me if I cross her, right?
Yeah.
So we start to hold back, even as adults. We try to accommodate people, don't tell them the truth, because we're afraid of what's going to happen. Well, those are the consequences that happened when you were little. So when you step out of that pattern, your ego gets reconditioned. So let's say, and I have a client who did this, she quit her job and she started to work independently, and she did have some clients who came to her, and so all these fears were not realized. In fact, she was becoming more successful at that. And I had to remind her, hey, remember when you were afraid to even do this, and now it's working. So you have to then register it in your mind. Oh, yeah, I made a change. I was afraid of it, and now it's working. Yeah, I can do that again. Now the ego registers that, and it allows you to make a new change again. After two or three times, it starts to become easier to just follow your true nature, your truth, your call. I think of the Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade. He's at the edge of the precipice. They're coming to kill him. The Holy Grail's across the other side of the abyss, and there's no way to get there. At least apparently there's no way to get there. He has no choice. He steps off the curb, and the ground comes up to meet his foot. He takes another step, and here's a bridge coming to meet his foot. By the time he gets to the fourth step, he just runs over to the cave. And I think of it that way, that our purpose, our desire is like the Holy Grail, and we just don't think there's any way to get there.
Yeah.
Because the ego has already told us there's no way to get there. So you have to take the first step. When you take the step, here comes the resources. Here yep. comes an idea for how to take the next step.
Absolutely.
And the ground comes to meet your foot. But it feels risky. It really feels scary.
Ayla Achad's my guest, and her book is called The Call of the Soul. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story. Stay right there.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan here with Ayla Achad and her book, The Call of the Soul, having to do with your life's purpose, yourself and your life's purpose. Interesting where we left off, Ayla, where you're talking about the business of taking that first step. When my wife and I made the decision to move, we were sitting, and this was March 1st, 2006. I remember the date because the day before was my last day on the job, because the radio station that I was working for at the time had been sold. And as of the 28th of February, they were changing the format and letting everybody go. They weren't going to keep anybody. And she was working on the first, and at 2:30 in the afternoon called me and said, I just quit my job. Because it was a very hostile work environment. So we're sitting there watching TV, ironically, and she says, I'm scared. I feel like we're on the edge of a precipice, and I don't know what we're going to do. Well, it's interesting how, taking that first step, I said to her, well, of all of the authors I've ever read and the interviews I've done and the programs I've been through, the workshops, the intensives, they all say the same thing. When you come to the edge of a precipice or a cliff, you do two things. You jump and you trust. And I don't think that many of us have been taught how to trust.
No.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, we've not been taught that. We've been taught that there's some guru out there who's got the right answer for you.
Like you.
That's not true. The trust has to come from trusting your own intuition
right.
about what the next step is. And here's the other thing about the soul. It opens like a flower. It's not goal-oriented, where you can set out and say, okay, here's what we're going to do, and we're going to just work toward that. No, you don't know what's next. You're in a new, it's like new land, and you just have to take the first step. As soon as you take the first step, now the next step begins to appear, or someone shows up. This is what I talk about in terms of serendipity and synchronicity. when you take that first step, suddenly people appear who know what you're looking for, and they give you more information, and you take the next step. And it is a step-by-step process,
yeah,
which is just really fascinating because it's the opposite of what we've been taught, which is you have to set a goal and work hard to get there and don't let any obstacles stop you. And, you know, it's a struggle. This is not a struggle. This is a very organic process. And the good news is your soul is going to lead you exactly where you need to be. So it's the way I describe it is like an acorn. The acorn holds the blueprint, the template for the oak tree. You plant the acorn and give it what it needs, it's going to become an oak tree.
Mm.
Same thing for us. The blueprint for where we go in our lives and what is going to work for us is in the original soul, in the seed that was in us from the beginning. And if you follow that, you can't go wrong. Now, the other thing is, if you look at your fingertip, you'll notice there's an imprint there that proves you're one of a kind. So no one else has the answer for your next step. They can give you advice, they can give you information, but you've got a sense, okay, this is the way I want to go. This is what feels good to me. This is what excites me. When you're following the soul, you are excited. You are energized. And I use the word enthusiasm. En, to be with, theos, the divine. You are with your own divine purpose. You're enthusiastic. You can see eyes light up. Everybody gets excited. I do this with my clients every day. I say, okay, go into your heart, go into your gut. If money and time were no object, what would you be doing? What would you love to do? And it'll come up. They'll see it. You love to do what you're doing. Fortunately, you found that. It'll come up, and they'll start talking about it. Eyes will light up. They get energized. They're excited. I just had someone yesterday, a massage therapist, same thing. And here's what she's really an artist. Here's what she wants to do. I said, okay, what's the first step? That's all you have to do is the first step. Oh, I could draw a plan. I said, okay. And as soon as she thought about drawing a plan up, I was like, well, I wouldn't have the money to do it. You know, I have to do this myself. I don't know if I have the energy at this point in my life. I said, who says you have to do it yourself? That's how you've done it before, but you may not have to do it now. What if people show up to help you? Because they love doing this kind of stuff.
Well, and then the other thing, too, is you asked her, what's the first step? And then she started going off on all these others. Like, I would have said, hold it, stop. Come back to the first step for me, please.
That's right.
Just focus
on
the first. Yeah. Come back to the first step. Just do that. Don't do anything more. Don't think about anything more. Okay.
Exactly.
Keep your
that's
vision.
That's where the ego kicks in. Ego kicks in and goes, uh-oh, if you do that, here's what's going to happen.
Yeah. Keep the vision. Absolutely keep the vision and keep the dream.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let that go and keep the enthusiasm. I love the definition that you give.
But that's why we need somebody to mirror for us.
Yeah.
I really believe
that's cool.
That we can't do this big shift completely alone because the ego steps in. You need somebody to keep you focused, like you just said. Okay, let's go back to that first step.
Yeah.
And let's just stay there. Let's keep the vision. But you need somebody to coach you or to be that mirror for you that says you can do it. Once you've taken a few steps and it's worked and magic has happened, somebody shows up that has the resources. Somebody shows up that says, hey, I'll help you with that without even getting paid. It's amazing that, you know, these old beliefs that you have to pay somebody. No, not necessarily. Some people are just looking for an exciting project to get involved in.
Yeah, yeah.
And once the first few steps happens, now your ego says, okay, that's how it works. I can support you now to do that.
Yeah.
So the ego and the soul change their relationship. The ego, instead of protecting the soul from moving forward, it starts to support it. And that's the transformation process we're looking for.
And it's not that the ego isn't on your side as much, but it's like, okay, so once you have convinced the ego and you say, oh, okay, yeah, it's kind of like now, okay, now the ego is on your side And now it's going to work with you and for you. I'd have to say that I am ever so grateful, especially to my father, for one thing that he shared with me. He shared with me a lot of things, but this thing in particular. And that is, he told me many, many years ago, before I started working, he says, find a job you love doing, because you're going to be doing it for the rest of your life. Now, when he was growing up, that's the way it was. You got into a job and you stayed with it. He says, because I got stuck. Now, he got unstuck in the 70s. He went back to college, to junior college, just like my mother did as well. And he went to computer programming school. Back then in the 70s, it was big old fanfold paper and punch cards. But he went back to school and he learned how to program computers. And that led him into his next the next phase of his career, both with the company he had been with for years and then transitioning elsewhere. But so what he showed me, number one, by what he said was, you know, find something you love to do. But he also showed me that even if you do get stuck, you can get unstuck.
He was a very wise man, and you're very fortunate to have had that experience.
Yeah, and he's going to be 82 years of age, August 13th, 2013.
Awesome.
And still getting around doing all kinds of great things and all of that. And I am just so fascinated to come across people, not only such as yourself, who are the coaches, the people who are trying to inspire and encourage and elicit that movement forward in an individual's life. Now, you can't do it for them. We know this. But I remember a conversation I've had this with a lot of people, and this kind of goes back to the 1980 presidential campaign when candidate Reagan asked the question, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? Well, I put a little spin on that answer to that question and say, either I am or I am not. And when if it were to be addressing a candidate or a politician for that matter, I'd say, but it had nothing to do with you. I did it. And somebody misinterpreted that, thinking that I was saying that I did it all on my own. Absolutely not. I owe my success to all of the people that I have come in contact with over the past 35 years. I did not do this on my own. And we don't. As much as some people would like to think that they do, they really don't.
No, and we've come full circle in our conversation here, Richard, as when we started out. Part of our cultural belief system is that it's you're self-sustaining, and it's one person, and it's everything you do, but it isn't. We're part of a culture. We're part of a
community.
A community, and it really involves the whole. Yeah.
Well, I think that for people to pick up a copy of The Call of the Soul, I think would be very valuable. It would be certainly beneficial to read through it. Go to the website, which, by the way, is, I believe it's Ayla Speaks, AILASpeaks.com.
Correct.
And you can find out about the book. You can find out about Ayla and the work that she does. A little background on her nursing, 40 years, amazing. Matter of fact, I have to tell you that that number right there, 40, is significant, because even though I haven't been in contact with him for quite some time on a regular basis, I still am in contact with my best friend, who I met when I was in sixth grade. We went through grade school, high school, and college together. We traveled cross country to Kansas and back, which almost cost us our friendship. Which, isn't that interesting how travel with friends, especially in a car, can jeopardize a friendship? That's kind of sad, but we got through it. We're still friends and so forth. And it's probably been, I think it's like 40 years. It's amazing. So I love those milestones. So it's very important, I think.
And I do coaching not only in person but on the phone. So if anybody is looking for someone to help them through this kind of a process, I'm happy to do that.
So tell us a little bit more about this business of the soul. Let's define some terms here, because everybody has a little different definition, and maybe we've sort of defined it in the roundabout long way. What is your definition of the soul?
The soul is the part of us that has been here from day one. So think about the fact that your body has changed. Your body doesn't look the same. It's not the same. Your mind has changed. Your thinking has changed. Your feelings have changed. So I think of anything that changes in our life as being the transitory part. What abides, when you look in the mirror and you see you are the same person who started out, right?
Mm-hmm.
That part that abides is the soul. That's what's connected to our divinity, to our and what's connected to everybody else. It's very unique on one hand. On the other hand, it's very much like the creation we're part of. It's part of nature. So in the Diamond Heart approach, which I went through for about 12 years, I learned that there are aspects of this soul. It's joy, compassion, strength, love, intelligence. All of these things are part of the soul's nature, and it is accessible to us. So how do we access it? We know it because we feel it. It's a sensory experience. It's a intuitive experience. It's not something that's in your head. And that's the difference. The stuff in your head is information. It's the experiences you've had all get codified. So everything you've heard, seen, smelled, tasted, all of the experiences you have, it gets coded and it's in your memory banks and it's in your mind. The brain likes to solve problems. So you can ask a question and it'll go to work on solving that problem. But the only thing it can use is past experience, past information. The soul, on the other hand, calls you forward into the future. Remember I said it's like that flower that's unfolding. So the soul actually knows just a little ahead what's next. I use an example in the book. We've all had this experience where you have a sense of what is coming. I find that when I'm driving, sometimes I'll end up slowing down naturally, and around the bend is somebody on a bicycle or some child that's just about to cross it or a deer. And I didn't know that ahead of time. I just had a sense of slowing down. HeartMath Institute has done some research on this, and what they found is that just before they show a picture of some disastrous thing, the heart registers the experience of excitement or anticipation right before they show that picture. So a few seconds before something's going to happen, we already know it. We pick it up. So what is that? Okay, that's what I'm calling the soul. The soul knows the future. It calls us to it. I just had an experience this morning. I got up late. I was getting ready, and my friend was doing a drumming experience, a class, at 8 o'clock. Well, now it's 8:15. I'm thinking, I'm already late. I shouldn't even go. And something kept pulling me to go. So I got myself together. I got there about 8:40, and they usually end at 9. Did that 20 minutes, and it was life-changing. It was just uplifting, and I had a whole new experience and a new insight. So what was that? The soul is saying to me, you know, it doesn't matter that you're late. Just get there. Just get there. I didn't know what was going to happen. You know, 99% of the time you're late for a meeting, it doesn't matter. But for this one, it was important. And that happens all the time. The more you listen, the more you experience it.
In a program I was going through, there was an exercise where we were to write down on a large rectangular piece of construction paper, I guess one of our commitments, if you will. And mine was that I was going to listen to the promptings and follow the promptings in that point, I was referring to it more as my higher self, that inner voice, the still small voice, which I think is the soul. And I had an experience where I was bicycling to and from work at that time. And there weren't that many paths to take because it was a fairly straight shot. I could go up a mile or down a mile, that kind of stuff, a block, I should say, up or down a block. And I went past this one intersection, And the prompting said, no, you were supposed to turn right back there. And I went halfway down the block. Now, let me explain to you. These blocks, these were farm field blocks. So to go halfway, and I turned around, I went back to that intersection. And at this point, since I'm going in the opposite direction, I made a left. And I went up that street, and then I went continued in the proper direction towards the station. I don't know why, but that nagging would not go away. And
right.
I thought, okay, you may be headed for disaster if you keep going down this path. You don't know. Maybe nothing, but you did make the commitment. So it's like, okay, great, you heard the voice. Now what are you going to do? I mean, why are you listening if you're not going to do something with the information that
right.
you're getting?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's
very important.
I found
the house
lesson.
I'm living in this way.
Uh-huh.
If I had not gone to a going away party for this nurse,
uh-huh.
I would not be living in this phenomenal A-frame house that I'm in now, because that opportunity was at that moment. The book, The Call of the Soul, would not have been written at this point in time had I not gone to a workshop. My friend had called me and said, why don't you come to Raleigh, North Carolina, and we'll go to this workshop. I didn't really want to go to the workshop, but I kept having this nagging feeling like, well, I'm not doing anything else right now. I ought to go. I went, and who was there? The agent, the literary agent, Lisa Hagen, who I told her two things about the book at a break. She said, I want that book. Write me a proposal.
Oh.
Now, do you know how hard it is for somebody to find an agent?
Mm, wow.
Much less a publisher? I wasn't even thinking of writing this book yet. But something came up in the conversation. There it was. Had I not gone, this book would not have been written at this time.
Extraordinary. Well,
It happens all the time, and I think it happens to everyone. We just have been out of practice. We haven't really learned to stay in tune with that, as you say, higher calling, higher voice, higher self, the call of the soul, whatever we want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's had this experience.
Have you ever? I'm sure you've had these what they call deja vu experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot of people try to figure out, well, what's going on? What is happening with those things? Well, I don't have anything scientific to explain it, but this is my explanation, that the universe is telling me when I have those instances, I have caught up to the point where my soul wants me to be. And so it's like, oh, you've been here before. Because my soul's already been there, so to speak. Okay?
Yes.
Because there's no time or space
exactly.
in spirit, right? And
right.
it's telling me, you're going the right direction. And I honestly can say that for the majority of my life, I have been in the right place at the right time. What's mm-hmm. extraordinary, however, is, and this can only mean that I've gotten to a place where I don't need those signposts anymore. I haven't had many of those deja vu experiences in, I don't know, 3 or 4 or 5 years since we moved to Santa Barbara. And mm-hmm. I kind of miss them in a way because they feel kind of neat. But I don't miss them in that sense that, oh my God, I'm fearful that where are they? I must not be going in the right direction.
Right.
I'm right where I'm supposed to be. And I know
yeah.
this, and the next step will make itself apparent and I'll go in that direction and I will know that too. And I think that's something else we might want to touch on here before we wrap up the program. And that is the difference between, from your perspective, Ayla, the difference between believing and knowing. And when I say believing, it's not necessarily in a belief system, an ism, but in terms of believing in oneself, believing that this is the right direction to go, I think I should go this way, blah, 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 as opposed to the knowing of
right.
self.
Right. In fact, I was just going to ask you how you knew. Where did you know? Where do you know you're in the right place? Where do you feel that?
I'm going to say in my gut. I'm going to say that it was comfortable. And
yes.
I will tell you.
You know it
yeah.
in your body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. You believe it in your mind.
Yeah.
You believe it in your mind. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's fine. And the knowing, what you know at a deep level, that's the soul. That's the knowing. Mm. And one of the things that I did realize with working with my clients and so on, sometimes you get an inkling, a dream, early on in your childhood even, you'll get a vision or a sense of what's going to happen. And when it happens, you go, oh my gosh, I remember feeling this way when I was a kid. I had a woman at a retreat I did, and she said, I drew this same drawing when I was a little girl. So we do have that kind of window to the soul that opens sometimes, and we don't know what it is, and it's not until later that it manifests. Mm-hmm. So sometimes we do have an inkling about it.
Yeah.
And that may be partly that deja vu. Who you're talking about?
Here's something kind of I've thought about this on occasion. I mean, I know I'm in the right place at the right time and all that kind of stuff with the job and the work and the vocation and the purpose in life. But what's really funny is in eighth grade, a lot of times before you graduate, they ask you to write the proverbial job. You know, what do I want to be or do when I grow up? Mm-hmm. I had no idea, but for some reason I wrote a paper on broadcasting in the entertainment field. I went and interviewed a talk show host who was also on TV. He was part of a kids show back in Phoenix. I have a photograph of he and I standing next to each other. I recorded the interview. I wish I had that cassette. God, I would love to have that. Would have been my very first interview. But I did this whole paper on this, right?
Right.
And completely forgot about it until after high school.
Yeah.
And high school had a radio station, a low-level thing where, you know, this one guy was doing playing music and that kind of thing. I didn't get involved in that. I wasn't drawn to any of these kinds of things and activities until after high school. Mm-hmm. And then, boom, opportunity one came along, and there I was. And then opportunity number two, and off I went. And so it's real interesting how you do something today that may seem totally innocuous.
Right.
I have no clue as to why I'm doing this, but I know I should be doing this, so I'm going to go ahead and do this. I'm going to build this, widget. But I really don't want to build widgets the rest of my life. And you forget about it and you go along your way. 10 years later, and that's all of a sudden, that widget somehow plays a role in. And so that's when I tell people there is no wasted time. There is no wasted experience.
But you don't always know until hindsight.
Well, that's true.
Exactly. You look back. I talk about this in the book I actually charted. You know, here step by step, I can see the theme now of why I was here and here and here. Yeah. And at the time, it didn't seem like it was congruent.
I just find that so fascinating. And so now,
it is.
And it takes me even to a book I read, actually a couple of books by this one author, James Redfield, and the Celestine Prophecy. And mm-hmm. specifically speaking to the point that he makes about each one of us having a message for the other.
Yes.
And how important it is to transmit that message to the other. And if you don't, and vice versa, then you're both denying the other of the opportunity of continuing to build that big picture puzzle with the new pieces.
Exactly. That's a wonderful summary. Yes. And that's why I do what I do, because I really am I'm passionate about helping people get in touch with the gift they brought to the world, because the world needs it. You wouldn't have it if we didn't need it. And each person brings a different piece.
Oh, it's...
And so I'm passionate about helping people remove the obstacles to it. That piece is there. You don't have to go looking for it. You don't have to find it. It's in you. What you have to do is get rid of the part that's keeping it from being actualized.
Yeah, it's to me, it is quite extraordinary. And that's why whenever I was doing interviews back in Phoenix, I hated to turn anybody down because they all had a story to tell. Mm. They all had something to share, some point to make. And I wanted to give everybody that opportunity. I was doing as many interviews then as I probably am now during the week. And back then, I had a 4 or 5 day a week outlet at 7 or 7:30 in the evening where these interviews would play. And and it taught me, a myriad of different lessons. But what an opportunity to hear from all of these different points of view. And I think that that has what has developed within me, at least, this aspect of not only curiosity, but also of an awareness of all of these other different types, these other modalities and concepts and ideas and, you know, in terms of this world.
Richard,
and the next.
I can hear your passion and your enthusiasm. And you obviously, from this interview, have the talent to be doing this. I'm so delighted that you invited me to share this moment with you.
Well, this is very cool. Well, and it's your moment, too. I don't want to take that away from you. You have brought to us some very good things through the book that you have written, which is a call, The Call of the Soul, having to do, and I'm paraphrasing here, of course, about the pathway to understanding who you are and your life's purpose. That's, to me... how would you like to incorporate something like that, Ayla, into the educational system?
Oh, my gosh. We need to teach children this. Absolutely. And actually, I'm getting younger and younger clients. I definitely have a lot of clients now that are in their 20s.
Wow.
Because the window of opportunity to discover this usually happens in adolescence first.
Mm-hmm.
And so in adolescence, it's a perfect time to teach people how to get back in touch with that calling.
Now, I'm working on a small little book. It's about choices. But the overall aspect of it has to do with the fact that no matter where you are, no matter how old you are, and no matter what you are doing now, you always have choices. Nobody can take that away from you. What choices you have available to you, however, that's another story. And that's why this program is here, to provide that. So,
yeah, what is your right choice?
Yeah.
Out of all those options.
Yeah. Now, there does come a point, and I say this sort of tongue-in-cheek, that sometimes you know how when you will go to a restaurant and they give you a 10-page menu?
Yeah.
And you have no clue as to what to choose? Because
it's
there
overwhelming.
Yeah, it's overwhelming. You have to be careful of that extreme. But, you know, there's so much that's available to us. And we need to avail ourselves of that. I encourage people to avail themselves of you.
There are tools. We can teach them.
Okay.
One of them is kinesiology. You know, you can actually.
Yes.
I've been in a restaurant where I'm trying to decide, and you can do a little kinesiology thing.
Oh,
and
there
will
you
tell
go.
You. Your
yeah.
body will tell you.
There you go.
What's the right thing to eat today?
Neat. I learned
that.
So
we need to teach them the tools.
Yeah. I think it was in my 30s that I learned about and learned kinesiology. And the thing is the first physical method that I was taught, eventually you don't need it anymore because you just start to know.
That's right.
You know, you just start to know.
That's right.
But practice it. I mean, if you don't know what kinesiology is, you want to check it out. Well, there's so much information
it's a
on the internet.
Point.
Yeah. It's a great starting point. Another great starting point is the book, The Call of the Soul by Ayla Achad. And we thank you so much. Again, the website is aylaspeaks.com. That's Ayla, A-I-L-A, speaks.com. We encourage you to go there. She's got all kinds of great information. They can even get in touch with you through email, I'm sure. And
they can get in touch with you right through the website.
Yeah.
Or find me on Facebook. I'm there too.
Very cool. I'm still reworking my whole Facebook presence. I'm working on that right now, and hopefully that'll be up in the next few months. But very cool. Thank you again. This has been a great program, and I really thank you so much. However, I can't let you go without asking you the three questions that I ask all of my guests.
Okay.
Who is Ayla Achad?
Oh, that's a good question. Who is... I am a light-bearing vessel. I am bearing the vessel of light to others. helping others open their light. Yeah.
Okay. And what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
I want to inspire people to follow the call of their soul, because that is essential to the world. That's what the gift they brought to the world. And I'm just here to help them do that, as I have been fortunate enough to do that.
And how powerful are we as human beings?
Oh, we are the divine spirit of the creator right here in reality, in real time and space. We're that powerful. We make a huge difference, each one of us.
Well, Ayla Chad, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program again. And again, go to aylaspeaks.com. Check out the book, The Call of the Soul. Thank you again for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to all.